This frightful situation cannot be remedied by any person in this material world. My Lord, it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time that has approached us all. Please repeat. This frightful situation,
cannot be remedied
by any person in this material world. My Lord. It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As eternal time, Kala. That has approached us all.
So, Prabhu, we could all mute at this time. And just
except for Ramanandaji, if you'll read the purport for me, please.
Oh, okay. Just one second. Okay. Oh, I have to unmute. All right. So, well said. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada. There is no superior power which can check the cruel hands of death. No one wants to die. However acute the source of bodily suffering may be. Even in the days of so-called scientific advancement of knowledge, there is no remedial measure, either for old age or for death. Old age is a notice that the arrival of death served by cruel time, and no one can refuse to accept either summon calls or the supreme judgment of eternal time. This is explained before Dhritarashtra because he might ask Vidura to find out some remedial measure for the imminent fearful situation, as he had ordered many times before. Before ordering, however, Vidura informed Dhritarashtra that there was no remedial measure by anyone or from any source in this material world. And because there is no such thing in the material world, death is identical with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as it is said by the Lord himself in the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 10, verse 34.
And that's where Krishna says, Mrityu sarvaharascham.
Death cannot be checked by anyone or from any source within this material world. Hiranyakashipu wanted to be immortal and underwent the severe type of penance, or rather a severe type of penance, by which the whole universe trembled, and Brahma himself approached him to dissuade Hiranyakashipu from such a severe type of penance. Hiranyakashipu asked Brahma to award him the blessings of immortality, but Brahma said that he himself was subject to death, even in the topmost planet, so how could he award him the benediction of immortality? So there is death even in the topmost planet of this universe, and what to speak of other planets which are far, far inferior in quality to Brahmaloka, the residing planet of Brahma. Wherever there is the influence of eternal time, there is this set of tribulations, namely birth, disease, old age, and death, and all of them are invincible. I'll mute myself.
Pratyakriya niyas niyasyeha kutaschitkarhi chit prapo saesha bhagavan kala sarveshang na samagataha omagana timirandasya gananjana salakaya chakshur omiritam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha namam vishnu padaya krishna padaya bhutale shrimati bhakti vedanta swami nityanamane namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pachani Nilisha Shoshani Vari Paskaja Deshitani. Panchakalpatrubhya Sakripa Sindhubhya Eva Cha Pachyaman Avanibhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Is there an echo going? Okay. So, as Krishna certified in the Bhagavad Gita, Abrama Bhuvanaloka Punar Avartuno Chuna, Mamupecha Tukunteya Punar Jamana Vijite, that there's only one option for becoming freed from the cycle of birth and death. And Krishna says, Mam Upecha Tukancheya, one who arrives at the abode of Krishna, one who leaves the material world, then Punar Janma, the repetition of birth and death, Punar Janma Na Vijite, does not take place within the spiritual world. But everywhere, from the highest planet to the lowest planet, no one is free, no one is exempt. Yastvendra gopa atavendra mahosva karma bandhanu rupa palabhajana matanoti karma ni nirdhati kintu cha bhakti vajam govindam adi purusham tamaham bhajami. And Brahma certifies that everyone from the topmost, from the demigods to the most insignificant being, are all subject to karma. They're all subject to the rules of material existence. And there's no option. Krishna says, jatasya hi dhruvo mrityor. So for one, jatasya, the root word here, ja, which means birth, jatasya. So jatasya is one who has accepted birth. Jatasya hi meaning certainly, dhruvo mrityor. Dhruva means, certain. Jatasihi, it is a fact. Jatasihi dhruvo mrityor. So for one who was born, jatasihi, certainly, it is a fact, dhruvo mrityor, that death will come. And then Krishna, in the same verse, describes the flip side of the coin, and dhruvam janma mrityasya cha. So one mrityasya, for one who was dead, then dhruvam, it is a fact, dhruvam janma, it is a fact that he will be born again. And but Prabhupada says, interestingly, in the purport, that he begins by saying that no one wants to die. And the fact of the matter is, we are eternal. The quality of the soul, sat chit ananda vigraha, the eternal feature of the soul, is such that you can't take away or change the fact that the soul wants to always exist. And this imposition upon the soul, or one is taken from eternality to ephemeral existence. We want everything to go on forever and ever and ever, every activity, every action. It's the nature of the soul. But to have things end, and to certainly to give up this life, no matter what situation one is in, no matter what species one is in, there are 8,400,000 different species, but the potency of when the living entity is put into the material world, avaranatmika, being covered, avaranatmika and prakshipatmika, this covering potency of maya is such that no matter what species of life one is given, he accepts it. And he's happy with it. And no one wants to die. We're not just talking humans. We're talking all 8,400,000 species. No one wants to die. A little tiny, insignificant ant will do whatever it takes to scurry away so it doesn't die. Even a germ does not want to die. Every single species wants to forever exist. Now, you might ask the question, then, well, wait a minute. If no one, in any condition, no matter how bad it is, no matter how painful it is, wants to die, then why is it that we see suicides? That would seem to contradict what Prabhupada's saying in the very beginning of the purport. What did he say exactly? No one wants to die, however acute the source of bodily suffering may be. But then again, we do see people that choose to die. I looked up, did a quick search to see how many suicides are actually performed. How common is it? And found that in America alone, by the way, which is not, I think, Japan or China, some, one of the Asian countries has the highest rate of suicide. Ours is kind of average. The average suicides in America are 35,000 a year. Now, this is successful suicides. And of attempts, there's almost 500,000 people a year try to commit suicide. So then again, we go back to the question. What Prabhupada just said in the purport, he says that no matter how acute the suffering, that nobody wants to die. So really, as I thought about it, and others may have different opinions, but there really doesn't seem to be any contradiction. People choose suicide, not that they want to die, but they simply want the lesser of the evils. In other words, if you had a choice between breaking your finger or breaking your neck, which would you prefer? So it's obvious. Or you want to, you know, would you rather break your baby finger or break your arm? So we would always want to take the lesser of the evils. So one is thinking, well, whatever this action may bring, if I'm suffering less than I'm suffering now, then I would take that. But it doesn't really mean that the person actually wants to die, because you just like you can't take heat and light away from fire, you can't take the desire for eternality away from the soul. One, actually, no matter what the situation is, we want eternality because that is a quality of the soul, but yet we will try to manipulate the material energy in such a way so as to reduce our suffering. But death, the soul never wants. We read yesterday that it's interesting that Vidura was preaching to Dhritarashtra, and but he was noticing that as he was preaching to Dhritarashtra, you understand that though there was a group of people listening and everyone there was in great rapt attention, he was focusing his preaching upon Dhritarashtra specifically. And this is the what is done by an expert preacher. Because many times when we're preaching to a mixed bag of people and people in different situations. And often we have to decide, okay, now of this group that I'm speaking to, where is my focus? I know that personally I experience giving, particularly the Sunday feast talks, when you never know what you're going to have in the temple room at a Sunday feast. There's been times I know where I thought, well, geez, what am I going to talk about tonight? And you speak so often that you want to have, you know, some idea, something new, something to talk about. Maybe you haven't talked about in a while. And so I'm figuring, all right, well, tonight I'm going to speak on a particular subject. But then all of a sudden, a group of people walk in the room. They've never been there before. Perhaps they're students. They have notebooks in their hand. And you find, oh, my God, what I plan to talk about, I'm not going to talk about at all tonight. I need to really focus now on what's the most important, and that is to focus or to enlighten as much as possible the people that have just come with the essential basics of our philosophy, like how we are not the body and how the soul is transmigrating, and talking about karma and the qualities of the soul, etc. And the devotees will all listen, assuming they're not in Maya, that they will all listen in rapt attention, because any aspect of our philosophy is very relishable. Whether we're talking about Krishna in the gopis, or whether we're talking about the descriptions of the Varnashram system, a devotee relishes everything. Just as when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking in the last 7 days in the life of Maharaj Prikit, he spoke on so many different subjects. And no matter what he was speaking on, his listeners were completely absorbed with great rapt attention. So anyway, that's the nature of a speaker. When one is speaking, he may have to focus on who he's going to talk to and how he is going to present the philosophy for that particular person according to their particular circumstances. Just like a doctor, when he's giving medicine, he can't give the exact medicine to every single patient, but based on the diagnosis of his exact condition, and not just the exact disease, you might say, but how far that disease has progressed, he may give different doses, different strengths, different restrictions to all different individuals. And in this way, we have to be very expert in our speaking, as was Vidura. Some of us may remember back when we first joined the movement, our preaching was fanatical and often very inappropriate. Sometimes devotees would speak to their parents and tell them, if you don't stop eating meat, you're going to go to hell. I know one devotee was telling his parents that if they're having sex life, that the Yamadutas were going to come and take them and drag them off to the appropriate hellish planet where one will embrace the naked form of the opposite sex. And anyway, not that these things aren't true, but they may well have been fanatically, inappropriately presented. But this is the expert preacher. He knows exactly what to say to every person, not just, you might say, of his own accord, but because he becomes, the more we are surrendered, the more we become empowered by Krishna. And as Balabhavata said, Kali Kala Dharma Krishna Namasankirtan Krishna Shakti Vinanahe Tara Pravartana. In other words, in order to preach Krishna Shakti, we become empowered by Krishna, who is the super soul in everyone's heart and gives us the intelligence to say what is appropriate for the individual to whom we are speaking that will be most beneficial to them. Just like, for example, Narada Muni, he had so many different disciples that he spoke to in such different ways. Like Dhruva, for example, and by the way, Narada knew exactly when to appear. As soon as his mother had sent him and instructed him to go off to the forest in order to fulfill his very strong material desires, ultimately the desire to have a kingdom greater than even that of Lord Brahma, he had to go off to the forest and pray to the Lord. And of course, Narada appeared exactly at that time. And Narada tested him in so many ways and determined by his testing, you go to a doctor, the doctor will take your temperature, he'll check your blood pressure, they'll perhaps draw some blood and do all types of tests. And when all the tests come back, the doctor will determine, okay, now what is the best course of action? Well, with Dhruva, rather than to try to continue persuading him, as he did in the beginning, that what he was after didn't really make any sense, he said, all right, then if this is what you want, then he gave him the perfect prescription. As we know from the Bhagavatam, it is stated, Kama sarva kamava moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yojena tijeta purushamparam, that one, even when one is sarva kama, one is full of material desire, tivrena bhakti yojena, one who's udaradi, or one who has good, broad intelligence, udaradi, tivrena bhakti yogena, one will Thibodeau would very firmly approach the Supreme Lord. And then ultimately he will become purified, as we saw in the case of Dhruva. When Dhruva finally saw the Lord, he stated, Kacham bichinvam api divyaratnam swamin karasmi varanyache, that my dear Lord, you know, kacham bichinvan, I was simply looking for, you know, a broken piece of glass, but now that I find you, I have no desire for any benediction at all. And the sons of Kuvera, when Narada was passing through the forest and he saw the sons of Kuvera naked, drunk, with the ladies, he rather than preach to him, he knew the best prescription at that time would be to... Actually, there's a lawnmower going off. I'm going to change my location. This is going to get pretty loud. See if I can find a quieter spot. I don't lose my reception. Material world, huh? Let's see. I'm a little quieter here. Let me find a little stool to sit on. Is my reception still good? If not, let me know. Hear me okay?
It's good.
Okay, good. All right. You don't hear that lawnmower anymore?
No, he's fine.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Fine.
All right. So anyway, so the sons of Kuvera, which we've been reading, and I think about this, we're reading in the Dhammadarasika prayers, he cursed them. He cursed them to become trees, knowing that that was the best... that was the best prescription for them. And of course, King Prachinabarhi, he determined the best way to preach to Prachinabarhi was not to preach to him directly or tell him or attack his particular situation, but he felt that he was his situation was such that he would be best enlightened by telling him about someone else. Sometimes when someone I don't want to use the word attacks us directly, but someone is referring to specifically us, we become very defensive, and it's very difficult to accept. So Narada, in this particular case, told this beautiful allegory about King Paranjana, and in this way enlightened him. I wanted to, boy, I got a lot to talk about here, but I'm going to try to stick with the time. What I wanted to do now was read a little bit from the Bhagavatam about death and about birth, because understanding the nature of death and from a very realistic standpoint, is extremely healthy. I mean, it's no accident that practically, maybe all, but at least practically all spiritual discourses took place where death was very, very imminent. Well, here, when Vidura could have spoken to Dhritarashtra at any time, even though he's particularly at this time now enlightened after being with Maitreya Muni. But that being said, he waited till the perfect time to come when Dhritarashtra was practically on his deathbed. He will be describing, as we read in further in this chapter, that he describes that his teeth are falling out, his memory is becoming weak, his liver is failing, his throat is becoming all choked up, and death is there. Arjuna heard from Krishna on the battle of Kurukshetra. I mean, how more could death be looming? Maharaj Prikit, he was also on his deathbed, so to speak. He had 7 days to live. Another wonderful discourse was Grandfather Bhishma, But when he spoke, he wasn't sitting on an asana. He was lying down in a bed of arrows, ready to leave his body. So the thought of death looming is very, very helpful. And to a devotee, we see death and old age as old age starts to approach us. We see that as a great boon. I'm going to read, Prabhupada says, this is in the story of King Paranjana. So this is in Prabhupada's purport. Prabhupada says, thus jara, the effect of old age, does not harass a devotee. This is because a devotee knows the instructions and the determination of Narada Muni. Because a devotee rigidly follows the instructions of Narada Muni, he has no fear of old age, disease, or death. Apparently, a devotee may grow old, but he is not subjected to the symptoms of defeat experienced by a common man in old age. Consequently, old age does not make a devotee fearful of death, as a common man is fearful of death. Thus, jara, or old age, takes shelter of a devotee and diminishing the devotee's fear. A devotee knows that after death, he is going back to home, back to Godhead. Therefore, he has no fear of death. Thus, instead of depressing a devotee, it advances devotee and helps him become fearless and thus happy. So I want to read, oh my God, we've got a little bit of time, not a lot. I want to read a little bit about death and the descriptions from the Bhagavatam. Okay, so here we go. So if you're thinking that when death comes, one simply sort of, you know, lies down and may he rest in peace, one who's not a devotee, death, he sees the messengers of the Lord come before him, their eyes full of wrath, and in great fear, he passes stool and urine. As a criminal is arrested for punishment by the constables of a state, a person engaged in criminal sense gratification is similarly arrested by the Yamadutas, who bind him by the neck with a strong rope and cover his subtle body so he may undergo severe punishment. While carried by the constables of Yamaraj, he is overwhelmed and trembles in their hands. While passing on the road, he is bitten by dogs, and he can remember the sinful activities of his life. He is thus terribly distressed. Under the scorching sun, the criminal has to pass through the roads of hot sun with forest fires on both sides. He is whipped on the back by the constables because of his inability to walk, and he is afflicted by hunger and thirst. But unfortunately, there is no drinking water, no shelter, and no place to rest on the road. While passing on the road to the abode of Yamaraj, he falls down in fatigue and sometimes becomes unconscious, but he is forced to rise again. In this way, he is very quickly brought to the presence of Yamaraj. Thus, he has to pass 99,000 yojanas within 2 or 3 moments, and thus he is at once engaged in the torturous punishment which he is destined to suffer. Now, it's mentioning here, it's just a few moments, because when the living entity leaves his body, very quickly he will enter, as the Bhagavatam goes on to explain, karmana divine trena jantura deho papateye striya pravishta utarang punksarita kanashraya. Very quickly he will take his next birth. But even though it's only a few moments, it doesn't matter how many moments it is. It appears, it's like a time warp, if you will. It appears to be a very, very, very long time. Just like our lifetime to a demigod would seem like just a few moments, but it's really all relative. To us, it seems like a very, very, very long time. To them, it may seem to like a moment, or the Indragopa that lives for maybe a second or two, his life also seems like 100 years. So anyway, this is the time warp. He is doorbell. These are probably people coming from my wedding that's coming up. He is placed in the midst of burning pieces of wood, and his limbs are set on fire. In some cases, he is made to eat his own flesh or have it eaten by others. I should have said before I started reading this, you know, sometimes on the news they'll say, before they show images, they'll say, we want to warn you, the images you're about to see may be a bit distressing. So anyway, his entrails are pulled out by the hounds and vultures of hell. Even though he is still alive to see it, he is subjected to torment by serpents, scorpions, gnats, and other creatures that bite him. Next, his limbs are lopped off and torn asunder by elephants. He is hurled down the hilltops, and he is held captive either in water or in a cave. Men and women whose lives were built upon indulgence in illicit sex are put into many kinds of miserable conditions in hells known as Tamisira, Anda Tamisira, and Raurava. Lord Kapila continued, "My dear mother, it is sometimes said that we experience hell or heaven on this planet, for hellish punishments are sometimes visible on this planet also." Well, I think I'm going to stop. Now, regarding seeing hellish situations now, I don't think we have to think very hard or very far. Really, pretty much all you have to do is pick up a newspaper or watch the news and see the hellish conditions that there are on this planet, many of which are meted out by due to karma by the demigods in mass types of punishment. But even individual, I remember when I was a young boy, my father took me to the medical museum in Washington, D.C., and there was this whole display of different types of instruments of torture that were used in concentration camps. And it was just, and to a young child, it was, you know, unbelievable. They had special types of, they looked like tongs, but they were used for crushing testicles. They had these electric things to electrify the body in different ways. Also during that war, they had these long, thin pieces of glass that they would insert into a man's penis, right into the urethra. And then they would, when the long, thin piece of glass was put in, then they would bend the penis so that it would break into many, many different splinters of glass. They showed us these things that they put on people's stomachs. It's like a bowl, and they would put rats inside the bowl and heat the bowl from the outside. And then the rats trying to get out, their only way out was to eat through the person's stomach. And I hear people shutting off. Anyway, these descriptions of hell are here to be seen, and to a devotee, it should all these things should be awakening us to take very seriously this process of self-realization. So anyway, I think I'm going to stop here because we're kind of running short on time, and see if anybody has any questions or comments, if anybody's still left after those descriptions. So Ramanandaji, you can turn it back on.
Yeah, we're still here. Can you hear me, Arian?
I hear you fine.
Oh, okay. Okay, so I unmuted everybody on free conferencing. And
is anybody still left out there? Even I was having a hard time reading those things.
You know, my wife and I, when we were on Oahu, there was this one van that would come around
They would just be driving around downtown Honolulu, and on the van, it was actually like a truck, you know, pretty large. They had pictures of aborted babies, and it was pretty graphic. But sometimes that's what needs to be done to shock people into the horrors that are even present on this planet, because otherwise you just gloss over it. You know, as I was just saying the other day, it's just like we have a Holocaust on a daily basis. You know, like the Hiroshima and Nagasaki together is what is being aborted every single day in this world. And people don't even think about it. So when you put it in front of people's face, they get offended. But actually, that's what's going on.
No, that's what the doctor... I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's unpleasant, but it's reality.
And we have to... because we're in such illusion that we have to be taken into reality. And whether it's relishable to hear it or not relishable to hear it, I would say to the false ego, it's not relishable. But within, when the pure soul is hearing spiritual sound vibration, I mean, to just hear about atrocities is one thing. But when you hear from a devotee who's putting these atrocities in their proper perspective, then it actually is joyful to hear. And of course, we understand that, you know, that really the soul never suffers anyway.
Isn't there a saying that good?
I
was thinking there's a saying, if you give a fool good instructions, they get angry.
Yeah.
Seemed to me that they really can't stop unless they have something else. You know, it's like the cart before the horse. They're attached to sense gratification, and it covers them and makes them crazy like that. Because the abortion, of course, they mind that, but the problem is, how do you stop having pregnancies and still have sex? So they got the pill, they got all these other methods, but they're still not using those effectively. So if they get, now Prabhupada said, all his disciples, they stop just because he said so. So if you get a higher taste, then there's a chance. Anyway,
that's the secret. That's the secret. Vishya vinivartante nirahasya dehinam rasavarjam rasopyasya param disvinavartate. That and you can only see higher taste. Otherwise, how is it possible? And Prabhupada pointed out many times, how is it possible that all his devotees, or so many of his disciples, that were like hippies, that were out having illicit sex like anything and taking drugs like anything, that we've stopped all those things because of the higher taste, param drishtva. Anyone else? Throw something to the pot here. So anyway, then I'll conclude. So for a devotee, when we begin to advance in spiritual life, it doesn't. I mean, we literally have no fear of. The more we advance, the less fear we should have of death. I mean, death to the materialist, the mouse and the cat. To the mouse, the cat is a very, very, very fearful. But to the kitten, it's warm and fuzzy. So we actually, Mrityu Sarvashaham, death is Krishna. A devotee has absolutely no fear of death, no fear at all. It doesn't matter. Just like the that sage who was giving different benedictions to people, to the Rajaputra, to the son of the prince, the son of the king, he said, charang jiva, charang jiva. Charang means for a long time. Chaling Ji, just live for a long time. Just don't die. Just live, because you're enjoying now. Karmically, you've got a good life. You've got a lot of gratification. Just prolong that life as long as you can. But to the Muniputra, the Brahmachari who was practicing great austerities, he's Mahajiva, you know, die immediately. Because for you, you're undergoing very difficult austerities now. But when you die, Mahajiva, don't live, die immediately. Because when you die, you're going back to Krishna. You're going back to the spiritual world. But to the hunter or the butcher, he says, Mahajiva Mamara. And those people in this day and age, for all practical purposes, I think that pretty much applies. Ma means to not. Mahajiva Mamara. Don't live or die. Because people are suffering like crazy, particularly in this age of Kali Yuga. They're suffering now, but what we just read, they're going to suffer more when they die. So what's bad now gets worse later. Don't live or die. But for the devotee, he says, jivava marava. It doesn't matter if you live or die. Because the devotee, he's already with Krishna. There's no difference.
Sir,
right.
Yes, Prabhuji.
I have one more. You want to go, Ramananda, or should I go?
Go ahead.
Nahari, if you remember once you were on an airplane and there was some problem taking off with the engine or something, and they drop all the fuel.
Oh, yeah.
So you
was on my way. I was on my way to meet Kridananda Maharaj in... I believe in Mexico, and no, Brazil. I was going to Brazil, and when we took off, I was kind of nodding out. It was late. It was a late flight, one of these kind of red eye flights in the evening. And I remember sort of nodding out, sitting at the seat, but I kind of saw some light flashing. And I looked out my window, and I saw the engine was on fire. We had just taken off. The engine was on fire. And then I forgot exactly what happened. The pilot had to make some announcement because people were starting to realize now that something was terribly wrong. You know, word spreads really fast. You know, bad news spreads real fast. And the people were screaming in fear. For themselves. I remember one lady was screaming for her baby, you know, my baby. You can't believe what it was like in that plane. Everybody assuming now the plane was going to crash. And I remember I just put my hands in my bead bag and I just chanted this sweetest japa I could ever chant. But then anyway, somehow by Krishna's arrangement, plane made it down. They had to fly over the Everglades and took a while. They couldn't just land it. They had to dump out all the fuel. And it made headlines. It was a big headline news because people, they saw this plane flying back and forth over the city trying to dump out all the fuel. And it said, the city of Miami braces for crash. They had all the fire engines. They had everything ready for the crash. But anyway, it never crashed. And it's true. I can honestly say I wasn't afraid.
Did the reporter ask?
I didn't.
I remember the reporter did afterwards.
I don't remember all the fine details, but I maybe you remember better than I do.
Well, they said how it is that you weren't affected. Everybody was going berserk, and you were there calmly chanting Hare Krishna. What was that? And as far as I remember, they interviewed you, and that was in the paper.
Yeah, it was definitely in the paper. It was in the paper. It was on the news.
It was all over the place. Your point about how you didn't get affected, that the people that were in the plane, they saw firsthand, here's a devotee that's fearless. How's that? What makes him different? Everybody else was losing it. That's the part I remember.
Oh, I was affected. I was affected in a very positive way. I was affected to chant the best japa I ever chanted, and really take shelter of Krishna. Just like if we see death and we see the miseries of this world, we're not unaffected. It affects us. It should affect us just like when we look at ourselves in the mirror and see old age coming with every new wrinkle and every time we're getting aches and pains in the body, it affects us, but it affects us in a positive way. We think, oh, you know, death is coming. Let me really take shelter. Let me get serious about my spiritual life. So this old age, it affects us, but it affects us in a positive way, not in a negative way. Just as much as when the mother cat comes, the little kitten's also affected. Oh, mommy's here. Everything is safe. Everything is good. So, yeah, definitely affected, but positively. Thank you, Madan, for remembering that. That was really appropriate. Anyone else? Then maybe we can try to end on time. Oh, yes, Ramananji?
No, we're a little over time. I'll save it.
Well, you know, a little over time. You're the boss.
No, it's okay. It's all right. It wasn't significant.
All righty. All right. Well, anyway, then thank you all very much for everyone's association. Well, I love this this whole run of verses, this whole thought about you know, death. And it's really very appropriate to all of us. And we should really see age when we're aging. And most of us, I think most of the people that are listeners here, and even if we're not aging, Prahlad advised his classmates, Komaram acharet pragyo daman bhagavatamiha dolabha manusya jamnatarapya dhruvam artadam. No matter what stage of life we're at, we should take shelter and prepare ourselves at the end of this life to go back home, back to Godhead. Thank you all very much.
Hi. Hare Krishna.
Hi.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Ramanandi, you still there?
I'm still here.